Now in a front yard, a man plays football with a boy and a girl. The man passes to his son. The family plays keep away from a golden retriever. A woman picks up a camcorder.
Here, let me get you guys.
Oh, good throw!
Good catch, Maggie.
Over here, Maggie.
Strike, Jack.
The father snatches the ball from the dog's jaws and throws to his son. The redheaded woman videotapes.
Catch, Dad.
Jack throws to his father, who fumbles. Amos beats him to the football.
Good boy, Amos.
The ball bounces into a garden. Now Maggie holds the camera.
Smile.
The viewfinder shows Jack waving his dog's ears. Maggie grins, then turns the camera on her mother as she sets a picnic table. The woman waves.
Hi, honey. Hey, what do you want, Jack? Hot dog or hamburger?
Hot dog. Ready. Hey, see if you can catch this.
Maggie tapes her dad flipping a burger onto a plate.
Get it?
Yeah.
He grins at Maggie.
Well, Jack, sit down.
Jack sits at the table.
Sit down.
The father motions to Maggie as she tapes, then carries over the cooked burgers from the grill.
You hungry?
Yeah.
What are you having, hamburger or hot dog?
Hamburger. Have some ketchup?
The redheaded woman squirts mustard on Jack's hot dog.
Mom, I didn't say mustard, I said ketchup!
Oh, I'm sorry, honey, I forgot. You like both, right? Okay.
She adds ketchup.
Enough?
Yep.
Maggie sets the video camera on the table.
You're having a hamburger, right, honey?
Yeah.
Later, her father sprinkles water into the golden retriever's mouth. Jack twists a knot in the hose.
Hey, you.
As the boy runs off, his father squirts him. Water sprays his wife as she writes on a notepad at the table.
Sorry.
She wipes down her paper. Her husband cocks an eyebrow as he turns away. Later, inside.
Mom, I'm having a hard time deciding.
About what?
About my birthday present. Otherwise, maybe going to Africa on a boat or going on a rocket to the moon.
I'll tell you what. If you choose a book about Africa and a book about rockets, you might be able to have both.
Cool.
Maggie, don't feed Amos at the table.
He needs his energy, Mom. Amos made a girlfriend on our walk today.
Wow. See, even old geezers can fall in love.
Amos isn't a geezer.
He's 91 in dog years.
Dad, how old are you?
Well, in dog years, I'd be 257.
It is old. That's a geezer.
Now, in a den, the brown-haired father unfolds a sofa bed, then takes a seat. As he answers the phone, he knocks over a framed picture of his family.
Hello. What's wrong? Is he worse? All right.
As he hangs up, he eyes the cracked glass over the family photo. Now a plane's landing gear descends toward a runway. Heat ripples from its tail. As the wheels touch down, smoke billows up from the tarmac.
Welcome to Raleigh, North Carolina, where the temperature is a balmy 87 and not a cloud in the sky.
Now a woman prunes a rose bush in front of a house. The brown-haired man pulls up in a silver Chrysler sedan. He climbs out holding a jacket and a tan leather overnight bag. The woman turns away from her gardening.
Hi, Mom. Got here as quickly as I could.
Didn't he?
They give each other a kiss and a hug.
How is he?
Well, he's sleeping right now.
How are you holding up?
42 years is a long time to be with someone.
I know you, Mom. You'll make it.
Now inside, James sits near a white-haired, bedridden man.
Hey, son.
Hey, Opti. Sorry. I didn't mean to wake you.
I was just having the nicest dream.
Oh, yeah? What was it about?
You were fly casting. And I was reading something there, you know. Walt Whitman, maybe. No, Emily Dickinson.
The infamous medicine bag.
Bag wasn't that bad.
Well, you didn't have to explain it to your friends. Their dads brought guns on camping trips. My dad brought a bag of poetry.
Didn't seem to do you much harm.
Where is the old medicine bag anyway, Dad?
Up in the attic somewhere.
You know, I was thinking I'd like to take the kids camping one day. Maybe I could borrow one.
Opti blinks, then briefly closes his eyes.
I wish I could go with you.
That's a great idea.
Jimmy, you and I both know I'm...
We're going to do it, Opti. You know what that is? That's a plan. Since you're feeling better, we'll take them camping. Just you, me, and the kids, huh?
Sure.
Like old times.
He flashes his father a brief smile. Later in the attic, James holds a pair of fly fishing rods. Holding one under his arm, he swings the other out at his side, pretending to cast a reel. Leafing through an open storage chest, he picks up a pouch made of tanned hide. Red, white, and blue Native American-style beadwork on the front shows crude representations of galloping horses and dancing people. James pulls out a hardcover book. Flipping it around in his hand, he reads the author's name on the spine, Emerson. James smiles, then peers back into the chest. Kneeling, he pulls out a battered cigar box and opens the lid, revealing a collection of belongings. The cover of a leather-bound journal reads, Diary, 1929. James opens it to a torn page, then sets it down and handles a gold-colored pocket watch. He picks up a toy figurine of an Indian wearing a headdress. James furrows his brow. Later, Opti runs his fingers over the hand-painted toy.
I used to play with him when I was a little boy at Grandma Emma's farm.
Other Indian figurines line a table.
She loved these figures, but this was a favorite. The medicine man.
He sets it down with the others.
Grandma Emma was sure proud of her Indian blood.
Runs in the family. Remember how you used to drag me to every burial mound you could find in search of your...
Race of lost warriors.
That's it.
Wearing a bathrobe, Opti closes his eyes.
You know what Emma loved most about her tradition?
His wife wipes her eye.
Their attitude toward death. It held no terror for the Indian. He faced it with perfect calm. In fact, it was customary to carry him out of doors as the end approached, so that his spirit could pass under the open sky.
Well, you'd be hoping for better weather than this.
Jimmy, it'll be fine in the morning.
Now lightning flashes on the house. In a bedroom, James sleeps. He wakes up. He lifts the open Emerson book from his chest and closes it. Setting it aside, he eyes the Indian toys lined up along a window. He climbs out of bed and picks up the medicine man. His finger touches the edge of its sculpted feather headdress. Lightning flashes on James's face. As he turns the figurine in his hands, his gaze lifts toward the window. Outside, Opti lies against a tree. Dropping the medicine man, James races out of his room and hurries downstairs. Meanwhile, the toy continues to fall in slow motion, now outside. In his room, the toy hits the floor. Outside, James hugs his father's lifeless body. Our view rises from their rain-soaked forms under the tree. Daytime. A landscape portrait on a wall shows a mountain lake. Tears well up in James's mother's eyes as she leans over a casket. Wearing a dark blue button front dress, she kisses her dead husband's forehead. Her son, daughter-in-law, and grandchildren stand behind her in the funeral home. James takes his mother's hand as she turns away from the open casket. A tear trickles down his wife's cheek as she gives the older woman a hug. Swallowing sadly, James steps closer to the casket. Opti lies peacefully in a tan jacket and open-collar shirt, arms crossed over his chest. James holds out the medicine man toy. Fighting back tears, he tucks it under his father's stiff hand. As Maggie watches solemnly, her mother massages the back of her neck. Now a wall clock's pendulum swings back and forth as its hands indicate nearly 2 o'clock.
James, do you have anything to say before we finish today?
Holding his hands folded in front of him, James shrugs.
No.
Meredith? Well, I guess what I want to say is, I know this is a hard time for you, James. But, I think...
The marriage counselor raises her eyebrows and nods encouragingly. Meredith's eyes grow red with tears.
I think this marriage is over. Oh, you think that's funny?
No, I don't. It's...
James shrugs, then turns away from his wife.
I don't get it.
Oh, come on, Jimmy.
Oh, come on, Meredith. Sure, we have our
problems. We've been in counseling for over a year.
Look, I just don't think that we need to take such drastic measures.
James, I don't think you're hearing Meredith.
What, are you seeing somebody else? Is that what this is about?
Of course not.
Then why can't we work it out?
Because we've tried again and again and
again. So we try again one more time?
No, I can't. We can't.
She eyes him tearfully.
We don't make each other happy.
She looks to the counselor, who shifts her gaze to James. Wearing a stunned expression, he fingers his wedding ring. Meredith dries her eyes with a tissue. Later, in his garden, James plants orange and yellow flowers. Nearby, a pitched awning hangs over the entrance of his log frame house. Banister poles on a balcony frame a second-story window as Maggie watches her father from inside. He struggles to remove a flower from its planter, then tears it up angrily and chucks it aside. Dirt splatters his face. As he sits back and calms down, Maggie turns away from the window. Nighttime. In the living room, James and Meredith sit with their children.
Your daddy and I love each other very much. It's just that sometimes people who love each other can't always live together.
Why can't it be fixed?
Honey, sometimes things can't.
I want Dad to answer. You always told me things could be fixed.
Sometimes grown-ups make mistakes, Muggs. This time there are just too many things. And sometimes it's best just to move on.
You really believe that?
Our view looks down on the Still family. Now a wildfire burns on TV.
And this is why our national parks are in such deep trouble. Every year, with more and more devastating forest fires, endangered wildlife, and problems of overcrowding and pollution, the park's future is uncertain unless we all chip in to help.
We always plan to go back to the wilderness. You and I. Well, there was still some of it left.
As Maggie watches TV, Opti sits beside his son on the couch.
You could still go?
James eyes his father skeptically.
Take Maggie. Teach her to fish, like I taught you.
Maggie pets Amos as she keeps her eyes glued to the TV.
You're too stuck in your ways, Jimmy. You've got to look around. Get a new perspective.
On TV, a black bear pulls a fish from a stream.
Good fishing's a little bit of heaven.
James eyes the empty seat beside him.
Maggie, how'd you like to go camping?
No, thanks.
There's a river that Opti and I used to love to fish.
I don't know how to fish.
Well, I could teach you. We'll catch trout and sleep under the stars. Just you and me. What do you say?
What about Jack?
Well, Jack and Mom could meet us later, at the end. I think a little time apart might be just what we need. And who knows, maybe things will be different. Maybe even better.
Really?
Sure. Why not?
Is that a promise?
Absolutely.
Pinky promise?
Pinky promise.
Maggie grins as she and her father clasp pinkies. Daytime. In her bedroom, Maggie squeezes into a pair of waders. Outside, James drags a green canoe toward an SUV. Back in her room, Maggie pulls the wader straps up over her shoulders. A logo on the front reads Orvis. Maggie blinks heavily. Now outside, James nearly trips over camping gear as he loads up the back of his blue SUV. Maggie tapes him with the camcorder.
There's Dad. Packing old blue for the 17th time.
He fits in a guitar case.
Oh, God. I hope he doesn't plan some stupid sing-along.
He adds his father's medicine bag to the gear.
Well, that's it.
As he closes the hatch, Meredith and Jack approach.
Time to say goodbye, Muggs. Old blue's raring to go.
Maggie closes the camera's fold-out view screen and gives her mother a hug.
Oh, goodbye, honey. I love you.
Love you, too.
I'm gonna miss you.
She kisses her daughter's cheek. Maggie hugs her brother.
Bye, Jack.
Smiling, James picks him up.
See you, Rocket Man. We'll call every chance we get. Okay?
Jack nods sadly. James kisses his forehead, then sets him down. Meredith flashes her husband a weak smile.
Bye, you.
Goodbye, you.
Blinking back tears, she moves toward him. As they embrace, James wears a sober expression. His eyes close. Meredith backs away, sweeping her red locks behind her ear.
Have fun.
Meredith smiles. James nods, then points playfully at Jack as he heads to a blue Toyota SUV. The little boy stares back sadly. James gets behind the wheel. As James and Maggie wave, Jack and Meredith return the gesture. Amos's gaze follows the departing car. Meredith blinks pensively as it disappears down the road. Now the Toyota speeds down a country road with the upside-down canoe lashed to its roof. Inside the car, Maggie reaches for the air conditioner controls on the dashboard. Frowning, she slides levers back and forth.
Oh, brother. I can't believe this. We're gonna sweat for the next 3 weeks.
Open the window, honey. Breathe some fresh air.
She glances at her father.
Dad, put on your seatbelt.
He shoots her a look.
You're not gonna nag me the whole way, are you?
If I have to.
He pulls out the shoulder harness and attaches it.
When are we gonna get there?
Where?
Wherever we're going first.
Kennebec River.
Where's that?
It's where I learned to fly fish. Be a little while yet, sweetheart.
They pass fields of black and white cows. Maggie raises a camcorder to her eye and points it out the window.
I've never seen so many cows.
She shifts the camcorder to her father's pensive face in the driver's seat.
You look worried.
He glances over.
That's because I am worried.
She lowers the camcorder.
About what?
Well, I'm worried about if your mom's going to take Amos for walks or if she's going to water the flowers.
Of to ones you didn't tear up.
You saw that, huh?
Uh-huh. You worry too much.
Well, that's my job, sweetheart.
I'm unhappy too, you know.
James looks thoughtfully at his daughter. Now at a campsite by a river, the SUV is parked by a family-sized tent. Nearby in the river's shallows, James and Maggie stand in waders.
Dry fly casting is to fishing what free will is to any discussion of religion.
Dad?
The fun is in the damn difficulty.
What fun?
You see.
He winds the reel.
People want easy answers, and that's God's joke on us, because you've got to work to catch fish.
Coaxing the fly rod, he gently tosses the line back and forth, then offers it to Maggie.
Here, hold this.
She takes it.
Now.
He stands behind her.
You want to move your arm like this, see?
He helps her swing the rod.
Fishing was invented for people who like challenges better than trout, right? Now, don't break your wrist. You keep it stiff.
He guides her arm.
1 o'clock, 11 o'clock. 1 o'clock, 11 o'clock. Okay? You tried.
Maggie makes a wide swing, and the hook catches in a tree branch. She tugs it angrily.
I can't do it. Oh. I can't.
Yeah, sure you can.
I can't.
Just slow your arm down. Stroke the air. Recite some poetry. It helps with the rhythm. Grab a book out of the medicine bag and let loose.
Pouting, she stomps ashore and sits on a log.
Maggie, come on, give it a try.
You give it a try. I quit.
Crestfallen, James stares at his sulking daughter, then shifts his gaze to his reel. He pulls out several feet of line and steps into the knee-high water. Keeping his wrist taut, he swings the rod back and forth. The line arcs gracefully over the water, snaking in midair.
O ye wild west wind, thou breath of autumn's being, thou from whose unseen lips the leaves dead are driven like ghosts from an enchanter fleeing, yellow and orange, pestilent red.
The fussy fly lure lands on the water's glimmering surface. From the log, Maggie sits up, watching. On the river, as a fish bites the fly, James deftly maneuvers the rod.
Whoa! Woo!
He quickly cranks the reel.
Hey, Maggie, I got one!
She smiles faintly.
Whoa, I think it's a big one!
The rod bends from the weight of the struggling foot-long fish. James reels it in and holds it up toward Maggie. She grins. Nighttime. Smoke rises from the embers of their spent campfire. In the tent, Maggie lies in a sleeping bag as James folds clothes.
Did you and Opti come here?
Well, we only came here once, but I returned without him about 14 years ago with a pup called Amos.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Was Mom here too?
No, I didn't know your mom back then.
Were you seeing someone else?
Well, matter of fact, I was. How'd you guess?
Was she pretty?
Well, I thought so.
What happened?
Didn't work out, honey. Let's have a good night song, huh?
He picks up a guitar.
Fishing and whistling. Whistling and fishing. Eat everything that they put on your dish. And when we get through, make a big wish that we'd never have to do this again. Again. I was in the army, but I never dug a trench. I used to push my knuckles on a monkey ranch. I'd go to town to drink. I'd give the girls a pinch, but I don't think they ever really noticed me. Father, forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us, Lord, and we'll forgive you. Yeah, we'll forgive each other till we both turn blue. And we're whistling and fishing in heaven.
In a black and white flashback, a dark-haired woman grins.
And eat everything that they put on your dish. When we get through, make a big wish that we never have to do this again. Again.
Say hello, Amos.
In another flashback, the woman holds Amos as a puppy and waves his paws to us. Now James sits by the campfire and thoughtfully rubs his brow. His flickering firelight reflects on his face. He shakes his head. He He dumps a cup's contents into the fire, then gets to his feet. Grabbing a pile of socks, he carries them to the tent's tie line, picks up some clothespins, and hangs the socks to dry. Our view circles James, revealing Opti staring sadly at his son.
Why didn't you tell Maggie?
She's too young.
Why didn't you tell me?
Dad, it isn't exactly easy to talk about, you know?
She was your fiancé, Jimmy. You loved her. Like I've never known you to love anyone. All you told your mother and me was you broke up.
Well, we did. In a way.
Someone fired a gun in a restaurant. I wouldn't call that breaking up.
Dad.
You didn't even go to a funeral.
Shifting on his feet, James nervously averts his gaze.
Didn't want to say goodbye. Couldn't face it.
You could have faced it with us beside you. You could have faced it with your family, Jimmy.
Wanted to keep some part of her alive.
Well, you succeeded in that, didn't you?
Holding up his hand, James heads inside the tent. Opti nods knowingly. Now in a flashback, the dark-haired woman runs in slow motion. Morning. James wakes up in the tent. Lifting his head groggily, he spots Maggie's empty sleeping bag.
Maggie!
He sits up in the cot and throws back the flap of his bag.
Maggie!
Wearing shorts, he pulls on a shirt. Now outside the tent, he emerges wearing jeans and boots.
Maggie!
His gaze circles the rocky riverbank, then shifts to a narrow bridge spanning the water a few hundred feet away. He heads across a grassy clearing.
Maggie!
Still scanning the area, he sets off at a jog up a slope toward the bridge. At the top, he checks down a road.
Maggie!
Running toward the bridge, he looks around, his loose bootlaces flapping as he runs. As his gaze settles on something in the distance, his gait slows and he rests his hands on his hips. On the riverbank, Maggie holds a fly rod and gently swings the line in a graceful arc back and forth toward the water. He stares with parted lips.
Morning.
A smiling blonde woman approaches.
Oh, hi.
He closes his shirt.
I'm Becky. I live down the road.
James.
I was out for a walk this morning. I ran into your daughter. She told me you were teaching her how to fish.
Yeah. She's a natural.
They watch Maggie practicing her swing. The blonde woman glances at a covered item in her hands.
Oh, I baked you a homemade rhubarb pie.
Thank you.
Go grab this. Thought you might be hungry.
Jane sniffs her pie.
I love rhubarb pie. My mom used to make it. I don't know what Maggie will say, though. It's not on the OAFL.
OAFL?
Official Approved Foods List.
Oh, she said you're fishing your way across the Northeast?
Yeah, we're headed toward West Virginia.
My parents kind of took me down there when I was about 5.
Really?
Yeah, it was the only big trip we ever really took as a family. We sure grow up fast.
Yeah, we do.
James glances pensively at the pie. Then they both look over at Maggie as she continues practicing with the fly rod. Now at the Dodson house, the television screen shows animated cars racing in a video game. Jack works buttons and a joystick on a handheld controller as he stares at the television. At a desk, Meredith types on a computer keyboard. As she hits a key, a software program's flowchart appears, with jagged red and blue lines tracking data. She heaves a breath, staring intensely at the screen. Now on a windy highway, James drives the SUV with Maggie beside him.
Don't look behind you, just keep going on, going on.
They drive past a sign that reads, "Welcome to Vermont, the Green Mountain State." Dreams you left behind.
that strange?
Well, that's one of the great mysteries.
Because there's this boy at school who stares at me a lot. When I talk to him, he just looks like he has to throw up.
Jane squints at the road.
The classic throw-up look, huh? And he's never spoken to you?
He told me to shut up once, but I wasn't even talking to him.
Oh, he's probably too short for you anyway, Mutz.
I kind of like him, though.
James widens his eyes.
Oh, yeah? Huh.
He furrows his brow.
Well?
I don't think there's a future there. How do you know when there is?
You just know.
Did you know with Mom?
Right away.
Tell me how you met her.
I told you that story, honey.
Tell it to me again. Tell me about the pumpkin that looked like a chicken. And the hay in her hair.
Now on a farmyard, a man photographs a pumpkin displayed on bales of hay.
This one here looks just like a chicken. Now don't tell me it don't look like a chicken, because absolutely it does.
Meredith stands near James.
A Rhode Island red or an Andalusian blue?
An Andalusian who?
As onlookers eye the chicken-shaped pumpkin, Meredith catches James's grin. Later, they walk side by side.
Well, I'm one of those English majors with a diploma from Harvard. Had no job, so I decided to try my living at journalism.
Oh, such an easy living, journalism.
Well, it's a choice. My father comes from the old school, where his daughter shouldn't have to make a living at all. Can't do what you really want to do, which was to be a solid gold dancer.
Really? Well, I'd like to see that.
Oh, yeah?
Near park tractors and pickups, Meredith grins.
So what about you?
I'm a freelance sports writer, but when I want to eat, I write about chicken-shaped pumpkins.
What kind of sports?
Golf, fishing, the gentleman sports. I wish I'd written Islands in the Stream, but unfortunately somebody beat me to it.
That is so funny. I did my dissertation on Hemingway.
Really?
James peers into her eyes and glances at her curly blonde hair in the hay-flecked wind. As James plucks a dried blade of grass from Meredith's hair, their gaze sobers intently. Now, in their canoe on a pristine lake, James and Maggie tie fly lures onto their lines.
It's a beautiful fly you have there.
Thanks.
I don't think I've ever tied a fly quite that nice. Look after your grandfather.
Why did you call him Opti?
Short for Opti the Mystic. Because he was always spouting Indian lore. Of course, he thought the name was a compliment.
Opti Mystic.
James grins and points at Maggie over his reel.
Did I ever tell you about the first time you and he met?
No.
You were about 3 weeks old. And I walked into the nursery and he was holding you in his arms. And he was showing you a picture of a trout.
Really?
Yeah. Now the funny thing was, you were looking at it.
Maggie grins.
Let's cast.
James loosens some line from his reel, switches the rod over his shoulder, and casts.
I will make you brooches and toys for your delight. Bird song in morning, starshine at night.
Maggie casts her line.
I will make a palace for you and me of green days in forest and blue days at sea.
The anglers sit in the canoe gazing at their lines lying atop the placid waters. Our view scans towering mountains surrounding them, then returns to the canoe.
Why did you stop fishing?
What do you mean?
You haven't fished much since I've known you.
Well, your mom doesn't like to fish, and fishing alone's no fun. And we've always lived too far from Opti to see him more than a few times a year.
Did that make you mad?
No. Your mom and I are different in a lot of ways. I guess that's just part of being married. They say opposites attract.
How are you and Mom different?
Mom and I come from different worlds. Neither one of us is quite comfortable in the other's world.
Is that why you're getting a divorce?
I don't know, sweetheart. Maybe.
James gazes thoughtfully at the water.
Hello?
They glance toward the voice.
Hi.
James smiles to a swimmer wearing a red cap. Maggie grabs her camcorder and videotapes the lean woman.
Beautiful weather, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is.
Through her viewfinder, Maggie watches the woman swim away. Flowing from under her cap, a mass of auburn hair streams behind her. Maggie shifts her camcorder toward her father, recording his shy smile. James glances at the far shore, where a man sits on the rocky bank, a magazine covering his midsection. As the woman swims up, he extends a hand to help her from the water. She climbs up, revealing a hazy, nude form. James's brow furrows.
Gosh.
Oh, my gosh. Maggie, put the camera down.
How you doing?
James waves to them.
Sorry.
He averts his eyes.
Dad, they're naked.
I believe the correct term is buck naked.
Can you see her boobies? They're huge.
No, I didn't notice.
We don't have to tell Mom about this.
You know, I think there's a few secrets that you and I can keep on this trip, and maybe this will be one of them, okay?
Now a stream of water drenches red-flowered succulents, white daisies, and yellow chrysanthemums in a flower bed. Holding the hose, Meredith glances sadly toward Amos's dark eyes. Meredith looks back toward the flower bed. Later, inside the house, Meredith carries a folder to a shelf in the den and files it with some others. She opens one and discovers a photograph face down atop a stack of financial forms. Meredith turns the photo over and peers at a picture of the dark-haired woman, Kristen, sitting in tall grass surrounded by wild flowers. Now in a flashback, Meredith wears a lacy white dress and James buttons a shirt.
Jimmy, have you seen my earrings? Oh, here they are. Hurry up, honey. I don't want to be late for my own wedding.
You can't be late. We're getting married at City Hall. Honey, hand me my cufflinks. They're in the drawer.
She rummages in a drawer.
Just because your Southern cracker friends won't mix with my Boston socialite crowd, why did we end up with a civil ceremony?
Nothing civil about marriage. Just ask Hemingway.
She finds the same photo.
Who's this?
Who?
In the drawer. She's very pretty.
James stares at Meredith, his fingers fumbling to button his shirt. Now in the den, Meredith turns the picture face down and closes the folder. She files it with the others. Nighttime. Near the lake, James and Maggie roast marshmallows at a campfire.
Why do they call this place Indian Lake? Are there Indians here?
Not anymore. There used to be, though. Long time ago. It was a much different lake back then. Life was harsh for the Indian. Didn't have marshmallows. You know, sometimes the winters were so bad and food was so scarce they had to eat bark off of trees.
Really?
Yeah. Definitely not OAFL, huh?
No. Did they believe in God?
Well, they believed that God was all around them, in people and in places and even in events. Your great-grandmother believed that, too, and she taught it to Opti.
She was Indian?
Yeah, I never told you that.
No. So we're Indian.
Part of us is.
Cool. Did you know her?
No, she died a long time before I was born, Muggs.
How?
She killed herself, Muggs.
James soberly meets his daughter's gaze.
Why?
She must have been very sad, I guess.
They gaze thoughtfully toward the campfire.
About what?
Well, she never told anybody. You know, sometimes we can learn things from sadness, and sometimes it destroys us.
Are you sad?
Yeah, I am.
Maggie studies her father's downturned face with a steady gaze.
You won't kill yourself, will you?
No. No, I won't, honey.
He meets her gaze.
Can Can we call Mom?
Later, Maggie uses a cell phone.
And Dad caught a fish when we also saw a lady swimming in the lake.
James puts a finger to his lips.
Oh, sounds like you're having a great time. Let me speak with your dad.
Okay, love you.
I love you.
Meredith sits over grapes, a book, and a glass of wine.
Hi.
Hi.
How's little Jack holding up?
Oh, he's doing fine. We're headed to the aquarium on Tuesday.
Her smile fades, then she forces another grin.
How about yourself?
I miss you.
Yeah. I miss you guys, too.
James shifts his gaze.
Hey, you'll never guess where we're going tomorrow.
Daytime. Through a viewfinder, a waterfall cascades down. Nearby, Maggie reads a guidebook.
Every year, the Indians chose a beautiful girl to go over the falls in a canoe. The last girl was the daughter of a chief, and he was so sad at her death that he rowed his canoe over the falls after her. Would you go after me if I went over the falls?
Are you kidding? I'd be right behind you, Muggs.
I'd go after you, too. Cinchy.
Cinchy? What's that mean?
I don't know, like, obvious.
Oh. Cinchy. It's a good word. Cinchy.
Two women approach.
Excuse me. Can you take our picture?
Yeah, sure. Just stand right there. It's great. You guys here on vacation?
Honeymoon.
The two women hug each other.
Oh. I came here on my honeymoon, too. That's great. Smile.
James photographs the couple's smiling embrace, then hands the camera back.
Thanks.
Maggie eyes the women as they take their camera and leave.
Come on, Muggs. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, so what do you want to do now?
I don't know.
You want to go fishing?
Sure.
They cross a crowded deck.
I like that they were married.
Really?
Yeah, I'd much rather marry my friend Tracy than that throw-up boy at school.
Oh.
Dad, why didn't you tell me you came here with Mom?
Well, you know, parents don't really talk about their honeymoon with kids, you know? Kids think it's yucky.
Did you like getting married?
Absolutely. It was a wonderful day. You know, we had a big cake and Amos ate 5 pieces.
Maggie grins.
It rained all day, but the lady at City Hall said that was a good omen. And you know what? She was right. Because we had you.
He touches the tip of Maggie's nose. Maggie's smile fades thoughtfully.
Do you still love Mom?
I'll always love you, Mom, sweetheart. She's a wonderful woman.
Maggie eyes her father's hand.
Can I hold your wedding ring?
James glances at his fingers on the deck's railing.
Yeah, sure.
James makes a face as he tugs at the tight-fitting ring, then removes it. Maggie peers at the silver wedding band. Later in the car, she finds the word forever engraved inside the ring.
Yet she never put me on the spot. Oh, ask me where I've been.
As James drives, Maggie looks up at him.
Believed in me.
You like this music?
Had her dad.
Go roping music.
She never found me.
Why is it in most country music songs the men are leaving the women, and the women are glad to see them go?
Well, that's what's known as the battle of the sexes. It's all part of being in love.
You mean they like to fight each other?
No. You know, it's funny, but often the things that attract people to one another in the beginning are the very things that lead to problems later.
James keeps his gaze on the road.
The trick is to find some area of common ground where you can compromise.
You mean sex?
James glances wide-eyed.
What do you know about sex?
It's what people do to have babies. It's very normal, Dad.
Oh, I see.
James grins and shakes his head. Maggie eyes the engraving inside the ring.
Forever. What's that mean?
Oh, that's cinchy. It means that I'm never going to get rid of that ring.
James returns his gaze to the road. He glances at the pale, empty line on his now ringless finger. A yellow Volkswagen van passes them. As they approach a hill, the van swerves from an oncoming car. The yellow van careens out of control and skids into a ditch. James brakes quickly, then lurches to a stop at the side of the road. He turns to his daughter.
You okay?
Uh-huh.
Wait here.
James gets out and approaches the van. Painted flames detail its fender and door, and yellow curtains hang in the windows. A young woman looks out.
Wow. That was something.
He opens the door.
Are you okay?
The woman queasily covers her mouth as she leans over the grass. Now by a lake.
Dad, do you believe in miracles?
It depends. Pretty amazing that no one was hurt in that accident today. I guess most of the miracles I've witnessed are pretty much on the small side.
Like what?
Catching a fish can sometimes be pretty miraculous.
James smiles, then whips his fly rod into the water.
Ernest Hemingway once wrote about catching a fish, releasing it back in the water, and the fish just staying there beside him in the stream. And you know what he did?
What?
He put his hand in the water, and he petted the fish. I mean, you want to talk about miracles.
He really did that?
Might have been a metaphor, but...
What's a metaphor?
It's something that stands for something else. Like touching a fish is like touching nature, touching God.
Something tugs on Maggie's line.
Oh my gosh.
Whoa, hey, Mux.
As Maggie reels in her line, water splashes.
Oh, ho! Wow, that must be a 2-pounder, Mux.
He's huge.
Let me get my line in. Keep your line taut. Keep the tip up, baby.
I'm trying.
She holds the rod steady and cranks in the line. James tucks his rod under one arm and helps her.
Way to go, Mugs. Get in easy. Don't lose it.
James crouches and eases his hands into the water. As he slides the caught fish onto his palm, it squirms out.
Are we going to eat him?
Well, what do you think?
I think we should see if that guy Hemingway knew what he was talking about.
Her father grins.
All right.
He gently lays the fish in the water. Maggie and James stroke the side of the fish, and it pauses briefly before swimming off.
Gosh.
Maggie rises and looks toward the distant horizon. The fish leaps out of the water, then vanishes under the surface.
Wow. Amazing.
Now at an aquarium, a turtle swims in a tank.
Look how beautifully they move in the water.
How come?
Because they're more at home in the water. They're happier there.
Mom, look!
Jack pulls his mother over to a larger tank.
Wow, do you think Dad and Maggie are catching fish like that?
Let's hope not.
A shark passes by the glass.
Do you think these guys are happy?
Who, the fish?
They were brought here from the ocean, right?
Mm-hmm.
The striped fish circle the tank.
Do you think they feel trapped?
Meredith glances solemnly at her son and rubs his neck.
On Great White Sharks Exhibit is now open in Auditorium 3.
Now at a rest stop, a sign reads 99 Cent Diner. Inside the establishment, James and Maggie sit at a table.
Do you think that fish felt any pain when you caught it?
Oh, absolutely. All living things feel pain, honey. But I'll tell you something. He was so happy to be set free, he won't even remember the pain.
Can I get you anything else?
No, just the bill, thank you. Okay.
Maggie stares at the dark-haired waitress.
Are you an Indian?
Yes, I am.
My great-great-grandmother was an Indian.
What tribe?
Oglala Sioux.
I thought you were going to say Cherokee. That's what everybody comes through here. He's got a great-grandmother who's Cherokee. You're from out west?
We're from Maine. My great-grandmother was from the West. She came east after Wounded Knee.
Oh.
What's Wounded Knee?
It was a great battle.
James's eyes shift to the waitress.
What happened?
Well, honey, there were many Indians killed.
Why?
They wanted the land for themselves. but they had to weaken us to get it. So they killed buffalo until they're all gone. 50 million buffalo. Can you imagine that? Then they took the children away from the parents and forbid them to speak their language or to sing their own songs or to pray in their own way. They wanted to get rid of the red and leave the man. That was the plan.
Grandma Emma was one of those children?
James nods.
Was she there when they killed the people?
But she survived, though her parents didn't. And she was sent east to live in somebody else's world.
Maybe that's why she killed herself.
Maybe. You know, I never thought of it that way.
Now the blue SUV heads down a dirt road into a wooded clearing. As James parks before a thin tree, Maggie opens the door and gets out. She looks to her father, who points ahead. Together, they walk to a wood railing that overlooks a vast stretch of lakes and fields. On the railing, a plaque reads, Canaan Valley, Iroquois, Shawnee, Delaware, and Cherokee.
Did Grandma Emma come here?
She went to school not too far from here. All this land, as far as the eye can see, belonged to the Indian, your ancestors. They didn't own the land because they didn't think that anybody could own land. But they lived here. Then the English came, took their land, forced them away from their homes onto reservations.
Maggie lowers her head and frowns. Sighing, James glances at her.
What's wrong, honey?
I don't want you or Mom to send me away.
Well, Maggie, that's not going to happen.
Yes, it will. It's already happening. When we get back, Mom will be gone and I won't have a home anymore.
Oh, Maggie.
I'll either live with you or I'll live with her. And things will never be the same. Ever again.
As tears roll down her cheeks, James gazes at Maggie. He wipes her face with his thumb and draws his daughter into his arms. Now a sign reads, Stables, Horses for Rent. In a corral, young girls and boys ride horses around in a circle. As Maggie passes, her father watches. Three women stand beside him.
Billy's father never takes him anywhere. Sometimes I feel like Mom and her.
My old man left when I was four. I had five kick-ass brothers who taught me to talk pretty tough. But inside, I was totally lost. My father was just angry and drunk. Joke's on me. I grew up and married a man just like him.
Hey, how about you, James? What was your daddy like?
He was a good dad. Spent a lot of time together when we were young. Hiking, fishing.
Is that why you're out here?
Partly, I guess. My wife and I are splitting up. I thought maybe a trip would do Maggie some good.
Damn, wish my old man was like you.
Yeah. Feel like I'm letting her down, you know?
You're not letting her down. She knows it, too. Any father who spends time like this with his daughter is giving her a gift.
She's probably just confused.
Yeah, she's not the only one.
I wish we could help you.
Talking about it's good.
Mm-hmm. And it's a hell of a lot easier talking about strangers than some stupid-ass shrink.
Yeah, I just think of us as your three muses. You got faith, hope, and tough talk.
James flashes a grin. Now as clouds hang over tree-lined mountains, James and Maggie's tent stands on a small clearing next to a lake. James drives a stake into the ground with a rock. Exiting the tent, Maggie carries a sleeping bag and lays it on a cot. Her father wipes his hands and heads to the SUV. Maggie kneels next to some supplies and watches her father take out his cell phone. As James looks in her direction, Maggie opens a red case and unpacks cookware. Dialing, James holds the phone to his ear. Maggie closes the case and heads into the tent, back at the house.
Rocket Man!
Dad, I found bombs growing in the back of my tongue.
Really?
And I learned how to swim.
Wow, that's great. Hey, you're really growing up fast.
Are we still going to say bye to Grandpa next week?
Yeah, we're going to meet next Saturday, okay? Hey, is your mom there?
She's in the office packing. Mom! It's Dad!
In the office, Meredith shifts her eyes and picks up.
Hi.
Hi. What's to pack in my office?
Oh, I was just making copies of our financial records. I found a little house in town right by the school.
Meredith drops her gaze.
So, how are things?
Maggie's having a great time.
What about you?
Well, I'm hanging in there.
Where are you?
Silver Lake, West Virginia.
He focuses on the rippling water.
We're almost to the Potomac.
You're moving fast.
You're moving pretty fast too, Meredith.
James swallows and looks down.
I call to say I'm still trying to figure this out.
The somber father shakes his head.
Just...
look. It's gonna be hard for a while.
That's an understatement.
I'm sorry, James. This isn't easy for me either.
I'm sorry, too.
In the office, Meredith wipes her lips and holds a slight smile.
Do you still miss her?
Who?
Kristen.
James knits his brow.
Why would you ask that?
I found her picture in your office.
Is that what this is about, Meredith?
You live with too many ghosts, Jimmy. You crowded me out. There's never been any room for me.
James shifts on his feet.
Can I speak with Maggie, please?
Meredith darts her teary eyes. Morning. In the tent, James sits on a cot and ties his boot. Rising, he glances at his sleeping daughter and buttons his shirt. Maggie wears a smile on her face. As James heads outside, smoke wafts from a small campfire. The camper lifts the canoe and carries it toward the water. On the lake, James sits in the canoe and pulls his fishing line onto his lap. He lifts the rod and casts the line.
Is not marriage an open question? When it is alleged from the beginning of the world that such as are in the institution wish to get out, and such as are out wish to get in.
Opti sits across from James reading a book.
That's terrific.
It doesn't apply to me. I'm in and I want to stay in.
Well, it takes two to tango. And you've got three or four, including me. You know, that was smart, what Meredith said about too many ghosts. What are you doing, Jimmy? Why do you keep us hanging around?
James averts his gaze.
I don't want to be alone.
You're not alone. You've got two beautiful children. You've got your mom. You got Amos.
Inside, Dad. Inside. I'm alone. I feel like I'm losing everything. I feel like I did when Kristen died. Only Meredith's still alive, and in some ways it's harder.
You've got to forget Kristen. Face the truth for once in your life. You're a soon-to-be-divorced man who's stuck in the past.
You say that like it's my fault.
Well, it is, partly. And it's partly ours, and Meredith's and partly nobody's. But we're past the stage of pointing fingers, Jimmy. You've got to take responsibility for what's to come.
As reflections from the water flicker across his face, James gives his father a stern look. Waving his rod, James casts his line into the lake. He sits alone in the canoe. Now the Toyota rolls steadily along a sunny road lined with evergreens. It passes a sign that reads Monongahela National Forest. Later, at a ranger's booth, the car in front of them enters the park. Next in line, James pulls up to the booth. Cars wait behind him.
Hi, welcome to Monongahela National Forest.
Thanks. Where's the best place to camp?
You don't have a reservation.
No, I thought it was first come, first serve.
Yeah, well, you're not exactly the first.
James shrugs at Maggie and gives her a sheepish smile. Maggie irritably leans back in her seat. Later, on a gravel campsite, James drops some metal rods by their collapsed tent. As he unfolds the canvas, Maggie exits a shed-like outhouse. Yards away, two kids play catch in front of a seated older woman.
Dad, the toilets don't flush.
Well, they're outdoor toilets, honey. They're not supposed to flush. These are the toilets like the first explorers used. Very possibly the same ones.
Yeah, well, one of the explorers pooped on the seat. Yuck, you can smell it from out here.
Honey, this was the last campsite. I don't know what you want from me.
You're pitching the tent on an anthill.
James checks the placement.
God!
This is the worst. It can't get any worse.
Hi, I'm Daryl. And this is Katie. We're your next door neighbors. We're from Wisconsin. That's my grandma.
James waves in her direction.
She's the union boss in the sausage factory in Sheboygan.
James stares at Daryl.
I'm going into fifth grade. I just took my hunter safety test back home. What's your name?
Maggie.
Hi, Maggie. This place sure smells like poop. Oh, and you got a hell of a lot of ants there, buddy.
I'm thirsty, mister.
What would you like, a cold beer? Soda?
Soda, please. My grandma drinks a lot of beer. She farts a lot, too.
Why am I not surprised? Mugs, get our guests a couple of cold ones. Make yourselves at home.
Nighttime. Marshmallows brown over a fire. Daryl smiles at James.
I liked how you poured boiling water on that anthill. I'll have to try it sometime.
Not without adult supervision.
I love marshmallows. We can't have them. Grandma says we can't stir a fire. Steel can't be trusted.
The freckle-faced boy snickers.
Oh, now you tell me.
Daryl, look at your marshmallow.
Oh, cool. Let me get your ice.
No, Daryl!
Daryl throws the stick with his flaming marshmallow like a spear. James stamps it out.
That was an incredibly stupid thing to do.
Just having fun.
Yeah, well, it's not Smokey the Bear's idea of fun. Jeez, no wonder your parents needed a break.
My dad's on his honeymoon. My mom just died.
James steps slowly toward the campfire.
I'm sorry to hear that. How long ago did she die?
3 weeks.
Well, that's awful.
I saw her in the hospital on a Friday. She died on a Sunday. Katie didn't get to see her at all.
I'm really sorry to hear that, guys.
I didn't want to come with my grandma. My dad made us. He said we'd get to roast marshmallows and see a wolf.
My dad says you don't see wolves. They're really shy.
You know, Maggie, I mean, Daryl, he might see a wolf.
Probably not.
Can we sleep here? You're more fun to be with than grandma.
James swaps a look with Maggie. Later, he gazes into the campfire, idly picking at his guitar. Maggie steps from the tent in her pajamas and socks and catches her dad's attention.
Hey, what are you doing up?
I forgot to kiss you goodnight.
They share a peck, then a hug.
Oh, goodnight, baby.
Thanks for letting him sleep over.
Well, thanks for the goodnight kiss. I sure needed it.
Daryl said that...
What?
Nothing.
Oh. You know, Mugs, my greatest fear when I was your age was losing my parents. It's scary, I know.
Did it hurt you when Opti died?
Very much. But you know what? I'm closer to him now than ever before. Just like Daryl's closer to his mom. You know? Mugs, it's not gonna be that bad. Okay?
You're worried.
Well, that's my job, remember?
Maybe you should get a different job.
I love you. Get some sleep, okay?
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
As Maggie leaves, James gazes into the fire. At home, Meredith reads to Jack.
I love you all the way down to the lane, as far as the river, cried little nut brown hair. I love you across the river and over the hills, said big nut brown hair. That's very far, thought little nut brown hair. He was almost too sleepy to think anymore. Then he looked beyond the thorn bushes, out into the big dark night. Nothing could be farther than the sky.
Meanwhile, a full moon hangs over the dark tree line. James makes his way to the edge of the camp, carrying his jacket and a flashlight. Brushing past a low shrub, he stops short and redirects the flashlight beam into the shadows. A startled wolf jumps back, gazes at him, then scampers out of sight.
Wow.
James approaches the camp, then stops again. Maggie sits by the fire, aiming the video camera at her own face.
So I thought if I made a video...
James stays in the shadows. His eyes squint sadly, and his brow cinches as he watches her. Later, he holds the camera. He swings out its hinged display screen and hits play. Maggie's calm face appears, head on.
Dear God, I hope you're listening. I thought I'd write you a letter, but I didn't know where to send it. So I thought if I made a movie... You could watch it over and over whenever I was too tired to pray. Please, God, make it all better. We only have a few days left to go on this trip, and it's ending all wrong. Please help me get Dad and Mom back together. Because if you don't, I don't know if I can believe in you anymore. So please listen to me. Your friend, Maggie.
James presses a button on the camera and stares off with a troubled gaze. Daytime. Dark clouds drift over the park, dropping sheets of rain. In camp, Maggie peeks out from the tent as her dad escorts Daryl and Katie to their grandmother's Winnebago.
Come on, guys. Here you go.
Horses are coming down.
Hey.
The older woman gives James a friendly nod and disappears into the camper with her grandchildren. As James notices Maggie peeking from the tent, she ducks out of sight. He heads back. Inside, Maggie sits by herself, sniffling gloomily. She looks up as James enters. Her father shakes out the umbrella, then lays it down. He sits on a cot facing his daughter. Maggie rests her chin heavily on one hand and her elbow on her knee.
You know, Muggs, things don't always turn out the way we want them to. I know that you want your mom and I to get back together, honey. But, you know, we don't always know what's best.
God does.
Sure he does.
Then why won't he make things better?
I don't know. But you know, God does things that we don't always understand.
Why did he let this happen?
He didn't have a choice, Maggie. Your mother and I are getting divorced, honey, and there's nothing that anybody can do to change that. But it's not your fault. And it's not God's fault. It's just the way things have to be right now. But I promise you, okay, in spite of everything that's happening, your life is going to be okay. It's going to be terrific.
You're just saying that.
No, I'm not.
You're just lying to me so I'll feel better.
Honey, I don't lie to you.
That's all you ever do. You said fishing would make things better. You said by the time we got here, things would be different.
Well, Maggie, I hoped that they would.
You made a promise and now you broke it.
What promise?
Your pinky promise. You made a pinky promise, don't you remember? You swore to me once that you would never get a divorce. I asked you what divorce was, and you told me, and you said that that would never happen to us.
Sweetheart, you were 5 or 6 years old.
I don't care how old I was. You lied to me. I don't want to be like other kids in school. I don't want to have 2 beds and 2 houses and never know where I live.
Sweetheart, I promise I'm going to make it up to you.
I don't believe in your promises. I don't believe in you. I hate you worse than God.
As Maggie runs out, James follows.
Maggie!
She flees into the woods.
Maggie!
In the downpour, Maggie races past ferns and bushes. As her father chases her, he stumbles and trips. He clambers to his feet.
Maggie!
Now Maggie hurries down a slope into a road where a camper heads straight for her.
Maggie!
James snatches her out of the way and they both fall back. The camper slams on its brakes.
Oh, honey, I'm so sorry.
Hugging her from behind, James kisses her head.
I'm so sorry.
Maggie cries.
Oh, baby.
Now by the water, a musician's fingers work a banjo. Campers dance in pairs in front of the band, which includes a bassist, a guitarist, and a fiddler. As a cook serves a woman a hot dog, children compete in a sack race. Daryl brings drinks to his grandmother and sister. By a teepee, a youngster sits astride a fake horse. As a mechanical calf rolls away on some tracks, he tries roping its neck with a lariat. At another table, Maggie films her dad seated before a pile of corn on the cob.
How much corn do you think I can eat in a minute?
In a minute? Not that many.
Yeah, you want to bet?
It's a bet.
Okay. Say when.
Go.
Through the viewfinder, Maggie films her dad munching the cob. Daryl approaches.
Do you want to dance?
As Maggie's gaze meets her father's, James waves his napkin toward the dance floor.
Go ahead.
Daryl smiles. Maggie shuts the camcorder's display screen and lays the camera aside. As she gets up, James smiles wryly.
Just don't go near any open flames.
Maggie glances back and Daryl grins sportingly at James over his shoulder. On the outdoor flooring, the dancers' feet move in sync, some side by side, some toe to toe. A mandolin player bobs his head gently as he plays, and the banjo player next to him wears a faint smile. Maggie and Daryl join the couples. As they begin to dance, James looks on wistfully. Daryl and Maggie grin. Facing each other, they join hands and hold them out. They turn shoulder to shoulder, then they let their other two shoulders touch, and they turn in the opposite direction. James shakes his head, then nods. Maggie's eyes light up bashfully as she and Daryl reverse a couple more times. Now Daryl spins Maggie under his arm, and she makes a nervous face. James cracks a grin. Now among the other couples, Daryl and Maggie stand face to face in ballroom position and sway loosely. As the lady on fiddle bows her strings, James approaches the two youngsters.
Excuse me there, young man. Mind if I cut in?
Daryl grins, nods, and leaves them. James smiles at his little girl.
You excited about seeing your mom and your brother tomorrow?
I can't wait.
I'll bet. Oh, let's not forget, Grandma's coming too. So surprised at how you've grown.
I didn't mean what I said about you being a liar, and hating you.
I know.
Can I ask you a question?
Well, I haven't stopped you yet, have I?
Did you see that video?
Yeah.
I knew it. That's why I made it. I said it was a letter to God, but it was really to you.
You're a pretty smart kid, you know that?
Dad, would you do me a favor?
Sure.
Would you write a letter to me? I know you write for magazines and stuff, but you never write for me.
Well, what kind of letter are you thinking about? Like a written letter or a video one?
Written, so I can carry it with me and look at it when I want to.
Okay. Well, what should I write about?
I don't know. Anything. Can I ask you one more question?
Absolutely.
Do you think you'll ever get married again?
Well, maybe if the right person comes along.
Okay.
James smiles, leans over, and kisses Maggie on the forehead. They resume dancing amid the other paired-up campers. James cracks a broad grin. He looks around, then returns his warm gaze to Maggie. Between them and the lakeshore, the five musicians play contentedly in their street clothes. The gleaming lake stretches far beyond the gathering toward hazy forested mountains. Nighttime. By a campfire, James writes in a journal.
Dear Maggie, there is a time in every family's life.
He stops writing, frowns, and tears out the page. He pitches it into the fire. Sparks surge briefly from the flames. James looks into the night. Opti sits with him by the fire.
Red is black?
More like Dad's paralysis. You know, I have so much to say, but whenever I put it on paper, it all sounds so trite.
You'll think of something.
Opti's gaze shifts thoughtfully, then settles on his son.
I'm leaving you now, Jimmy. I won't be coming back. I'm leaving you. Like Kristen did. And like others will, as long as you breathe. Because now you can stand on your own 2 feet.
Opti looks at the toy medicine man in his fingers, then holds it up.
And I'll keep this close to me to remind me of you.
He clutches it tightly and rests his other hand on his fist.
I love you, son.
James's eyes pool with tears.
I love you, Opti. I'm gonna miss you, Dad.
Opti is gone. Sparks surge upward from the fire.
I'm gonna miss you.
James gazes skyward. Inside the tent, Maggie lies awake on her cot with her sleeping bag just under her chin. She blinks calmly as she stares upward. Daytime. As the Toyota pulls away from the camp, James waves to Daryl and Katie.
See you guys.
Bye, Daryl. Bye, Katie.
The siblings wave. Later on the open road.
I think Daryl liked you.
Dad.
I don't think there's a future there, though.
Sunshine beams down on the passing car.
Is your seatbelt on?
Now two aging hands hold a polished green urn. A wedding band gleams on the owner's finger. It's James's mother. A breeze ruffles her sheer scarf and stirs through her short red hair. She sits serenely facing a lake. On a nearby dirt drive, the Toyota arrives. As it draws near, Mrs. Dodson breaks off her distant gaze. She smiles, gently lays aside the urn, and gets to her feet. She and Maggie share a hug.
Hi, Grandma.
Mrs. Dodson hugs her son.
Julie.
Have you been here long?
Mm-hmm. A few minutes.
They look out over the lake. Later, at the Toyota, Maggie unrolls a white banner onto the hood, then uncaps a black marker. She concentrates as she writes on the fabric. Meanwhile, James and his mom stroll the shore.
So how are you?
I miss your father. Sometimes I miss him so much I think I'm going to die. But then I look at Maggie and, you know, it's like he never left.
She's a great kid.
Yeah.
You know, in all the hundreds of miles we traveled, she only once asked how long it was going to be till we got there.
Maybe because she already was where she wanted to be, with you.
You have to say that. You're my mother.
How are you, Jimmy?
I'm great.
They stop.
I'm getting divorced, Mom.
I know. Meredith told me last week. I'm not going to ask you why. It's nobody's business but your own.
I wasn't really sure why myself. I kind of took this trip to figure that out.
And did you?
You know, this trip became kind of a pilgrimage. I mean, we went to places that were important to me, to Opti, to Grandma Emma. Met a lot of interesting people.
And what did you find out?
I found out that Meredith and I made two great kids, Mom. Mm.
They glance at Maggie as she writes.
And then we never had a chance.
Mrs. Dodson studies her son's eyes.
Because I've been hiding from the truth with a lot of ghosts. Because I was afraid to be alone.
She smiles warmly.
You might have told me that.
Yeah, I might have, but you had to
discover it for myself, I know.
Yeah.
I'm still a little worried about the kids, though. How I'm going to handle all this when I get back.
Kids can be surprisingly resilient once they know that they're really loved.
Mrs. Dodson touches James's cheek.
And as for you, I'm not Opti. I'm not going to tell you to read poetry or Indian stories. I'm just going to tell you to really live your life, honey. Every minute of it.
It's going to be a hell of a lot harder than reading poetry.
Now a tan Mercedes sedan pulls down the dirt path. As Maggie looks over, she spots her mother. Meredith smiles and parks.
Mom!
Mrs. Dodson and James turn to face her.
Mom!
Maggie races to the car.
Hello, sweetheart.
Oh, I missed you.
Jack and Amos get out.
Look who we have.
Hey!
You caught him.
Yeah, well, he missed you too.
As Maggie hugs Amos, Jack gives his grandmother a hug.
Rocket Man!
James lifts his son.
Daddy!
How was the trip?
It was cool. We saw some horses, we saw some goats, and even elephants.
Wow, I think we should tell a park ranger. What do you think?
Kissing him, James puts Jack down.
Come on, let's go down to the water.
Hey, Grandma. Come on, boy.
James smiles at Meredith.
Hey, you.
Hey, you.
So how was
Catchman?
They share a warm gaze.
Well, it's good to see you.
Thanks for coming.
She nods.
Well, we got something to do. We should get to it.
As Meredith follows him, James grabs the medicine bag from the SUV. A banner hanging over the car reads, "Hi, Mom."
You like the sign?
I love it.
She ducks underneath and walks toward the lake. At the shore, Mrs. Dodson lifts the urn and holds it close to her chest. James and Meredith join her and the children. Passing a book to his daughter, James exchanges the medicine bag for the urn. Mrs. Dodson removes the cover and grins.
Let's do it, Muggs.
As he steps toward the water, Maggie opens the book.
Because I could not stop for death, he kindly stopped for me. The carriage held but just ourselves and immortality.
James throws handfuls of ashes into the lake.
And I had put away my labor and my leisure too for his civility. We passed the school where children played at wrestling in a ring. We passed the fields of gazing grain. We passed the setting sun. We paused before a house that seemed a swelling of the ground. The roof was scarcely visible, the cornice but a mound.
Since Dear Maggie, then to centuries, but each. I know that you're sad about the divorce. Your mom and I are sad too. But being with you these last few weeks has helped me laugh again and to figure out some things. That's what families do. Help each other laugh and solve problems that sometimes seem to have no solution.
In the office.
There's a story Opti told me of an Indian boy who was to climb a mountain. And before he climbed, his father told him that near the top, he would come to a great chasm that would frighten him. Jump, his father said. It's not as far as you think. Jump, my darling Maggie. I finally did. I promise you, you'll make it. Love.
A photo shows James with his children.